the response of the free world to the aggression in Korea has given those nations new confidence. But events in Korea have also made it more apparent than ever that the evil spirit of aggression is still abroad in the world. So long as this is true, we are all faced with a clear and present danger. Today we face a violent and cynical attack upon our democratic faith, upon every hope of a decent and free life, indeed upon every concept of human dignity. Those who support this evil purpose are prepared to back it to the limit with every device, including unlawful military force. The Soviet Union and its colonial satellites are maintaining armed forces of great size and strength in both Europe and Asia. Their vast armies pose a constant threat to world peace. So long as they persist in maintaining these forces and in using them to intimidate other countries, the free men of the world have but one choice if they are to remain free. They must oppose strength with strength. This is not a task for the United States alone. It is a task for the free nations to undertake together. And the free nations are undertaking it together. In the United Nations, Secretary of State Dean Acheson has proposed a plan for uniting for peace, to make it possible for the General Assembly to act quickly and effectively in case of any further outbreak of aggression. In our own country, and in cooperation with other countries, we are continuing to build armed forces strong enough to make it clear that aggression will not pay. Our military establishment moved the necessary men and supplies into Korea, 5,000 miles away, in an amazingly brief period of time. This remarkable accomplishment should not delude us into any false sense of security. We must be better armed and better equipped than we are today if we are to be protected from the dangers which still face us. We must continue to increase our production for military purposes. We must continue to increase the strength of our armed forces, Army, Navy, and Air Force. We must devote more of our resources to military purposes and less to civilian consumption. All this will be difficult, and it will exact many and great sacrifices. But we are aware of the dangers we face, and we're going to be prepared to meet them. Now look. No aggressor makes any mistake about that. We value our independence and our full will of life in this country. And we will give all that we have to preserve them. We are going ahead in dead earnest to build up our defenses. There will be no letdown because of the successes achieved in Korea. As we go forward, let us remember that we are not increasing our armed strength because we want to. We are increasing our armed strength because Soviet policies leave us no other choice. Now, the Soviet Union can change this situation. It has only to give concrete and positive proof of its intention to work for peace. If the Soviet Union really wants peace, it must prove it, not by glittering promises and false propaganda, but by living up to the principles of the United Nations Charter. If the Soviet Union really wants peace, it can prove it, and could have proved it on any day since last June 25th by joining the rest of the United Nations and calling upon the North Koreans to lay down their arms at once. If the Soviet Union really wants peace, it can prove it by lifting the Iron Curtain and permitting the free exchange of information and ideas. If the Soviet Union really wants peace, it can prove it by joining in the efforts of the United Nations to establish a workable system of collective security, a system which will permit the elimination of the atomic bomb and the drastic reduction of regulation of all other arms and armed forces. But until the Soviet Union does these things, until it gives real proof of peaceful intentions, we are determined to build up the common defensive strength of the free world. This is the choice we've made. We've made it firmly and resolutely. But it is not a choice we have made gladly. We're not a militaristic nation. We have no desire for conquest or military glory. Our national history began with a revolutionary idea, the idea of human freedom and political equality. We've been guided by the light of that idea down to this day. The forces of communist imperialism dread this revolutionary idea because it produces an intolerable contrast with their own system. They know that our strength comes from the freedom and the well-being of our citizens. We're strong because we never stop working for better education for all our people, for fair wages and better living conditions, for more opportunities for business and better lives for our farmers. We are strong because of our social security system, because of our labor unions, because of our agricultural program. We are strong because we use our democratic institutions continually to achieve a better life for all the people of our country. This is the source of our strength, and this idea, this endlessly revolutionary idea of human freedom and political equality, is what we hold out to all nations as an answer to the tyranny of international communism. We've seen this idea work in our own country. We know that it acknowledges no barriers of race, our nation, our creed. We know that it means progress for all men. The international communist movement, far from being revolutionary, is the most reactionary movement in the world today. It is violently opposed to the freedom of the individual, because in that communist system, the state is supreme. It is equally opposed to the freedom of other nations, because in that communist system, it is Soviet Russia which must be supreme. When General MacArthur and I discussed the whole problem of peace in the Far East, we recognized that this is far more than a military problem. Today, the peoples of the Far East, as well as the peoples of the other parts of the world, are struggling with the false revolution of communism. Soviet communism makes the false claim to those people that it stands for progress in human achievement. Actually, it seeks to turn them into colonial slaves of a new imperialism. In this time of crisis, we ask the peoples of the Far East to understand us as we try to understand them. We're not trying to push blueprints upon them as ready-made answers for all their complicated problems. Every people must develop according to its own particular genius and must express its own moral and cultural values in its own way. We believe that we have much in common with the peoples of the Far East. Their older civilizations have much to teach us. We hope our new development may be helpful to them. We know that the peoples of Asia cherish their freedom and independence. We sympathize with that desire, and we will help to attain and defend their independence. Our entire history proclaims our policy on that point. Our men are fighting now in Asia to help secure the freedom and independence of a small nation which was brutally attacked. We know that the peoples of Asia have problems of social injustice to solve. They want their farmers to own their land and to enjoy the fruits of their toil. That's one of our great national principles also. We believe in the family-sized farm. That is the basis of our agriculture and has strongly influenced our form of government. We know that the peoples of Asia want their industrial workers to have their full measure of freedom and rising standards of living. So do we. That is the basis of our industrial society in this country. We know that the peoples of Asia have problems of production. They need to produce more food and clothing and shelter. It is in this field that we can make a special contribution by sharing with others the productive techniques which we have discovered in our own experience. We're not strangers to the Far East. For more than a century, our missionaries, doctors, teachers, traders, and businessmen have knit many ties of friendship between us. If we can be of help, we are ready to offer it, but only to those who want it. Through the Economic Cooperation Administration, Point 4, and in many other ways, we are trying to help the peoples of other countries to improve their living standards. We will continue these programs in cooperation with the United Nations. Even as we undertake the necessary burdens of defense against aggression, we will help to expand the work of aiding human progress. Otherwise, measures of defense alone will have little or no value. We seek full partnership with the peoples of Asia, as with all other peoples, in the defense and support of the ideals which we and they have written into the Charter of the United Nations. What we want is a partnership for peace. I've spoken to you tonight about some of the things which all of us are thinking about as we push ahead to finish our job in Korea. At a time when our forces under General MacArthur are locked in combat with a stubborn enemy, it is essential for us to understand what our broad purposes are and see clearly the kind of world we seek to build. As your president, I realize what it means to the homes of America to have the youth of our land called to meet aggression. These are the most solemn decisions and impose the heaviest responsibility upon those who must make them. I've told you tonight why you must do what we are doing. We hate war, but we love our liberty. We will not see them destroyed. We want peace, but it must be a peace founded upon justice. What we want is a partnership of peace with all the world. Our American policy of peace founded upon justice is as old as this republic, and it is stronger today than ever before in our history. And with God's help, we intend to keep it that way.